Second A. This alternation of settlement, conquest, refinement, fresh conquest, refinement, is particularly to be noted in the region of the Euphrates and the Tigris, which lay open in every direction to great areas which are not arid enough to be complete deserts, but which were not fertile enough to support civilized populations. Perhaps the earliest people to form real cities in this part of the world, or indeed in any part of the world, were a people of mysterious origin, called the Sumerians. They were probably brunettes of Iberian or Dravidian affinities. They used a kind of writing which they scratched upon clay, and their language has been deciphered. It was a language more like the unclassified Caucasic language groups than any others that now exist. These languages may be connected with Basque and may represent what was once a widespread primitive language group extending from Spain and Western Europe to Eastern India and reaching southwards to Central Africa. These people shaved their heads and wore simple tunic-like garments of wool. They settled first on the lower courses of the great river and not very far from the Persian Gulf, which in those days ran up for 130 miles and more beyond its present head. They fertilized their fields by letting water run through irrigation trenches, and they gradually became very skillful hydraulic engineers. They had cattle, asses, sheep and goats, but no horses. Their collections of mud huts grew into towns, and their religion raised up tower-like temple buildings. Clay, dried in the sun, was a very great fact in the lives of these people. This lower country of the Euphrates-Tigris valleys had little or no stone. They built of brick, they made pottery and earthenware images, and they drew and presently wrote upon thin, tile-like cakes of clay. They don't seem to have had paper or to have used parchment. Their books and memoranda, even their letters, were potsherds. At Nippur, they built a great tower of brick to their chief god, Elil, Enlil, the memory of which is supposed to be preserved in the story of the Tower of Babel. They seem to have been divided up into city-states, which warred among themselves and maintained for many centuries their military capacity. Their soldiers carried long spears and shields and fought in close formation. Sumerians conquered Sumerians. Sumeria remained unconquered by any stranger race for a very long period of time indeed. They developed their civilization, their writing, and their shipping through a period that may be twice as long as the whole period from the Christian era to the present time. The first of all known empires was that founded by the high priest of the god of the Sumerian city of Erech. It reached, says an inscription at Nippur, from the lower Persian Gulf to the upper Mediterranean or Red Sea. Among the mud heaps of the Euphrates-Tigris Valley, the record of that vast period of history, that first half of the age of cultivation, is buried. There flourished the first temples and the first priest rulers that we know of among mankind. Second B. Upon the western edge of this country appeared nomadic tribes of Semitic-speaking peoples who traded, raided, and fought with the Sumerians for many generations. Then arose at last a great leader among these Semites, Sargon, 2750 BC, who united them and not only conquered the Sumerians, but extended his rule from beyond the Persian Gulf on the east to the Mediterranean on the west. His own people were called the Akkadians, and his empire is called the Sumerian-Akkadian Empire. It endured for over 200 years. But though the Semites conquered and gave a king to the Sumerian cities, it was the Sumerian civilization which prevailed over the simpler Semitic culture. The newcomers learned the Sumerian writing, the cuneiform writing, and the Sumerian language. They set up no Semitic writing of their own. The Sumerian language became, for these barbarians, the language of knowledge and power, as Latin was the language of knowledge and power among the barbaric peoples of the Middle Ages in Europe. This Sumerian learning had a very great vitality. it was destined to survive through a long series of conquests and changes that now began in the valley of the two rivers. Second C. As the people of the Sumerian-Akkadian Empire lost their political and military vigor, fresh inundations of a warlike people began from the east, the Elamites, while from the west came the Semitic Amorites, pinching the Sumerian-Akkadian Empire between them. The Amorites settled in what was at first a small upriver town named Babylon, and after 100 years of warfare became masters of all Mesopotamia under a great king, Hammurabi, 2100 BC, who founded the first Babylonian Empire. Again came peace and security and a decline in aggressive prowess, and in another 100 years fresh nomads from the east were invading Babylonia, bringing with them the horse and the war chariot, and setting up their own king in Babylon, and so on. Second D. Higher up the Tigris, above the clay lands, and with easy supplies of workable stone, a Semitic people, the Assyrians, while the Sumerians were still unconquered by the Semites, were settling about a number of cities, of which Assur and Nineveh were the chief. Their peculiar physiognomy, the long nose and thick lips, was very like that of the commoner type of Polish Jew today. They wore great beards and ringleted long hair, tall caps and long robes. They were constantly engaged in mutual raiding with the Hittites to the west. They were conquered by Sargon I and became free again. A certain Tushratta, king of Mitanni to the northwest, captured and held their capital, Nineveh, for a time. They intrigued with Egypt against Babylon and were in the pay of Egypt. They developed the military art to a very high pitch and became mighty raiders and exactors of tribute, and at last, adopting the horse and the war chariot, they settled accounts for a time with the Hittites, and then, under Tiglath-Pileser I, conquered Babylon for themselves about 1100 BC. But their hold on the lower, older, and more civilized land wasn't secure, and Nineveh, the stone city as distinguished from Babylon, the brick city, remained their capital. For many centuries, power swayed between Nineveh and Babylon, and sometimes it was an Assyrian and sometimes a Babylonian who claimed to be king of the world. For 4 centuries, Assyria was restrained from expansion towards Egypt by a fresh northward thrust and settlement of another group of Semitic peoples, the Aramaeans, whose chief city was Damascus, and whose descendants are the Syrians of today. There is, we may note, no connection whatever between the words Assyrian and Syrian. It's an accidental similarity. Across these Syrians, the Assyrian kings fought for power and expansion southwestward. In 745 BC arose another Tiglath-Pileser, Tiglath-Pileser III, the Tiglath-Pileser of the Bible. He not only directed the transfer of the Israelites to Media, the lost 10 tribes whose ultimate fate has exercised so many curious minds, but he conquered and ruled Babylon, so founding what historians know as the New Assyrian Empire. His son, Shalmaneser IV, died during the siege of Samaria and was succeeded by a usurper, who, no doubt to flatter Babylonian susceptibilities, took the ancient Akkadian-Sumerian name of Sargon, Sargon II. He seems to have armed the Assyrian forces for the first time with iron weapons. It was probably Sargon II who actually carried out the deportation of the 10 tribes.